in a secret lab somewhere in the Western Hemisphere. The perfect human specimen has been born. He has the strength of 10 men and the wisdom of 20.
Rick Munn.
Now you listen here. He's a very naughty boy.
TNT Radio.
Now go away.
Okay, it's Wednesday, the 1st of May, May Day to some people, and this is TNT, Today's News Talk. We're locked, we're loaded, and we're coming at you live from the Gold Coast in Australia. Just before we came on air, Murray and I were talking about classic rock, as we do. One of the dudes in the studio was trying to sing a Bon Jovi song. I'm not a big Bon Jovi fan, but if you want some class, beautifully constructed classic rock from that era, check out the Aramania album by Def Leppard, believe it or not. Not the old has-beens that they are now, but back in the 80s they were in their prime. Check out Paramania, and also a very obscure rock band from Sacramento in California called Tesla. Their first album, Mechanical Resonance, is an absolute gem, and that's where I'm using the title or the phrase "coming at you live" from. They have a fantastic song called that. But anyway, enough rock trivia for you people for this morning. What's on this hour? Plenty. Absolutely loads. Gemma is going to be joining me again in just a minute, our news correspondent, bringing the breaking stories of the day here in the UK. Piers Corbyn is going to be joining me at around about 20 past the hour. And then Ian Davis is going to round it all off. Before we get to any further content, just to steer you lovely people towards our website, tntradio.live. We have a live chat on there. If you don't know about it, maybe you're new to this setup, but you can register. And then you can post your thoughts, comments, opinions, questions, criticisms, suggestions, hook up with people, make new friends, maybe even make new enemies on the live chat. It has been known to happen in the past, but get yourself on there, dip your toe in that water and see how you find it. You can send me a message on my email account, rickmunn@tntradio.live. And thanks to the people that take the time to do that, and check out our What's On section also. It's a little bit of an info hub, really, that will tell you what's happening in your area. Just two events of note. One actually coming up this weekend, the Weekend Truth Festival in the Lake District from the 3rd to the 5th of May. Get yourself up there and get yourself bombarded and immersed in the truth from any number of speakers that are on the stages up there this weekend in the Lake District. Then in the end of the month, Stand in the Park and Light Paper combining to present Stand in the Light Music Festival, also in the Lake District, from the 24th to the 27th of May. So if you've got nothing else on, or you're making an effort specifically to get there, go and show some support and love for those two fantastic events as advertised here on TNT. Rishi Sunak, haven't bashed him for a while. Let's give him a little slap here before Gemma comes on. He's been, someone's been putting messages out from his Twitter account. The number of students bringing family members and dependents into the UK was too high. It was too high, says Rishi. This wasn't fair. This wasn't fair, says Rishi. Imagine that. What wishy-washy language is that? Why not just play hardball for once, Rishi? Come on, man. Show us that you've got some oomph in that scrawny little body of yours. It was too high. It wasn't fair. It was too high. It wasn't fair. Our changes are working, he says. Student dependent numbers are now down by 80%. So what? What does that mean to the average Joe or Joanna on the streets of the UK? I'm surprised. I'm surprised that figure hasn't been fact-checked, because any numbers that come out of Downing Street these days usually have a community note underneath them to say this is absolute bollocks. These figures are wrong. They're lies. It's complete bollocks. So anyway, that would be my community note, just one word, and I would spell it with the X at the end just for that little extra emphasis. Spitting. Anyway, good time to bring Gemma on here for some breaking news on TNT, Today's News Talk.
Be a part of the conversation.
I want representation I can trust.
Have your say.
Biden isn't doing enough.
This is Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Don't know if it's a good sign or a bad sign when you're foaming at the mouth and actually spitting saliva on your camera, Gemma. Do you ever get like that? Do you ever foam at the mouth? I haven't seen you foaming at the mouth before, but maybe you do. I don't know. What's the story with you?
It's been known to happen. Actually, it's first thing in the morning when I'm on with Sonia Poulton on the TNT UK breakfast show. Sometimes the stuff that she brings to the table in her editorial, that gets me really riled up and I end up foaming at the mouth. But I won't on this show with you because I really can't compete with your epic rants and epic tirades. And, you know, I find myself chuckling sometimes in the wings waiting to come on and thinking, right, get your composure, Coops. Come on. You're on with Rick in a minute. Do some serious journalism. But I have to laugh, you know, one community note. Bollocks. I mean, it says it all, doesn't it? It does say it all. It really does.
I am so reserved. Listen, you see this here, this incarnation of me that you see in the air, even when I'm doing that, I am so reserved. If I went nuclear, it would be bad for everybody concerned, but I have to almost restrain myself even to do these little tirades. But sometimes you just have one of those days, you know, and you just can't stomach the sight of certain people and you can't bear to look at their nasty little faces when they're coming out with these lies and they're acting treacherously towards the people of the UK in Sunak's case, or the people of Ireland in the case of O'Gorman and Simon Harris and Micheál Martin and Roderick O'Gorman and Norma Foley, this rogues gallery and this evil, wicked conglomeration, the denizens of Arkham Asylum have almost manifested themselves into the Irish government at the minute. It sometimes it just gets on my wick, Gemma, and things need to be said.
Well, I'll say one thing about you, Rick. Once met, never forgotten. And I found myself out on one of my hikes the other day, and I had the words Helen McEntee reverberating around my head like some earworm, and it was your voice. So you're a good broadcaster, Rick. I'll give you that. You know, you really do get into people's heads, mine included.
Well, you know, it's not intentional. I genuinely mean that, because most of the times I have no idea what I'm going to say or even sometimes what I'm going to talk about. And then when we go live, it just all spills out. But anyway, that's just the way I roll, like it or not. But you're very professional, and I don't want to dilute that in any way, shape or form. So let's punt this across to you and get a flavour of today's breaking news. What's going on in UK and Ireland today?
It is extraordinary, Rick, I have to say. This extraordinary headline that's popped up since we were last on air, obviously talking about the tent clearances in Dublin. This is back to the UK, and it literally is a week to the day since a 13-year-old girl was arrested and charged with attempted murder after the three stabbings in a school in South Wales. Today, since we last spoke an hour ago, a 17-year-old boy has been arrested and charged with attempted murder at a school in South Yorkshire, Sheffield, after three people were injured in an incident involving what police are describing as a sharp object. That's breaking news at the moment. It just seems that knife crime is epidemic. We had the attack in East London yesterday in Hainault, 36-year-old man still in hospital. He's the suspect, but he's too ill to answer police questions at the moment. And also, second headline of the hour, it's also emerged that the 14-year-old who died yesterday in that stabbing attack went to the same school as a young woman who was killed in another stabbing attack in Nottingham last year. That was the Valdo Calconi case, which we've covered here. Her name was Grace O'Malley Kumar, and she went to the same school as the 14-year-old boy. He hasn't been named. Barnet Bancroft Private School in Wood Green in North London. The school flag is today flying at half mast. So knife crime is everywhere across the headlines at the top of this hour. And just to round it off, the final headline is former Conservative Prime Minister Boris Johnson, who in the last hour has come out in support of a Conservative mayoral candidate in the local elections tomorrow in the West Midlands. He has said, forget about politics, forget about Parliament, forget about Westminster. None of it's important. Just concentrate on local issues. That seems a real slap in the face for your mate and mine, Fishy Rishi Sunak.
You know, this business about the stabbing, so you referenced that story from last week, a 13-year-old girl stabbing in Wales. Another story, I think you said just this morning, a 17-year-old boy's been done for another stabbing, and then we had that one yesterday. I was on last night with the guys in the State of the Nation show on TNT, Timothy Shea and Hesher Brian McLean, and that's one of the things that they were asking me, what about all these stabbings that are happening in the UK? And, you know, obviously in America, there's a lot more shootings than reported than stabbings, because Americans have got access to guns. But does it not underscore the point that if you do away with guns, you know, because you can't really legally own a gun in the UK unless you're a farmer or a sports shooter or maybe a police person or, you know, for private protection. You and I can't just go out and buy a handgun and keep it for our own protection. If somebody wants to kill someone else, they'll find a way to do it. And if they ban samurai swords, for example, someone will go out and buy a hunting knife. And if they ban hunting knives, you know, they'll go out and buy a kitchen knife from B&Q. Or if they get banned, you can still buy pocket knives. There's always going to be a way for people that want to end someone else's life to find a way to end their life. So I think that's why, of course, we're reading more about these stabbings, or we're hearing more about these stabbings in the UK, because we simply don't have any access to guns. No doubt if we did, they would be shooting people rather than stabbing them, maybe. I don't know. But, you know, evil is evil and crime is crime. It's people that commit crimes, not weapons that commit crimes. We need to get to the root cause of the problem.
Well, it's very interesting, actually. I mean, what's interesting with the first headline, this 17-year-old boy arrested and in connection with attempted murder today comes exactly a week after the 13-year-old girl in South Wales. I mean, that's an extraordinary headline in itself, you know, twice in 1 week. But also Sadiq Khan, he's been speaking this morning. He was referencing the attacks in East London yesterday, the very visual attacks that we saw, the man in the yellow hoodie wielding that huge machete samurai style sword. What Sadiq Khan has said this morning in the UK is that it's all down to a lack of provision in mental health services. He's blaming over a decade of Tory austerity cuts, conservative cuts. Obviously, Sadiq Khan is Labour, and there is a local election tomorrow. But he's overlooking policing, overlooking, you know, I get what you're saying, Rick. You know, guns aren't available in the UK and knives are readily available, as are other sharp-bladed objects. Although there are laws now in all supermarkets about being over 18 to buy knives. But there is policing here. What about policing? What about intelligence? What about people understanding how bad knife crime is, especially within gun culture, gang culture, and offsetting it and policing it. But he's passing the buck. But these crimes are not going anywhere. That's three in a week. Three since the stabbing in South Wales last week. That was a teenager. Another teenager charged today. 36-year-old man. Police are waiting to speak to him. His injuries are quite severe, involving the vehicle crash yesterday before the stabbing rampage. You know, this is extraordinary. It's getting definitely getting worse. In the UK, it's not getting better. And also, 17-year-old boy and a 13-year-old girl, these probably will go through the courts as adult cases, attempted murder. And is that really appropriate for a 13-year-old and a 17-year-old, maybe in a 17-year-old's case, to be charged as adults when they've committed crimes in school as children, by definition? It's extraordinary scenes here in the UK with regard to knife crime today.
Sad to say, but if 13-year-olds, Gemma, are running around stabbing people with knives, you know, the trajectory of the path, God only knows what upbringing they've had or lack of an upbringing they've had to be in that position in the first place. Could be a mental health thing, it could be a societal thing, but if they're doing that type of crime at 13, certainly some form of intervention is needed, because imagine another 5 years worth of being in the system, what that person will pick up then and what they will come out like, even if they do serve time in a juvenile detention facility, coming back out at 18 again. It's a mess. And the supermarket thing, just to close this one off, I was surprised. I went recently and, you know, being an old man now, I've started to, you know, top up my gardening utensils. So I needed a new rake and I needed a garden hoe to get rid of those nasty weeds that are in between the flagstones at the back of my garden. And when I took them up to buy them, they wouldn't sell me them until the manager came along and, you know, verified I was over 18 and then authorized the sale of these. And I said, "Is it for real?" And they said, "Yeah, any bladed, pointed gardening tools, even if it's a rake, you have to get it signed off by the manager because it could be used as a weapon." So that was news to me. But yeah, apparently that's the case. And doesn't it go to show, but as well, if you really want to, you can take any implement. You know, I could use this pen. I could take you out with that pen, no problem. If it stabbed you in the right place in the neck, in the carotid artery, you'd bleed out in a matter of seconds. So what do? Do you ban the sale of these? Is it the pen is the problem, or is it the psycho wielding the pen is the problem? That is the question. And I think that question has just been answered. But anyway, Jim, you're a little bit nervous now, aren't you? If we ever meet each other again, I promise I won't come at you like this with a pen making stabbing motions towards your neck. But anyway, a little tip for you too, by the way, keys as well. You can use those keys to inflict a lot of damage. You can flick your keys into someone's eyes, take an eye out very easily if you're ever finding yourself on the brink being assaulted. I think self-defense courses should be more widely taught for everybody. because there's a lot of bad hombres out there and we need to be able to preserve ourselves in this big bad world. But anyway, enough of that for now. Gemma, thank you very much as always for your input this morning. It's been a blast, and hopefully you'll be back again in the morning at 9 for my shift anyway to do more Locked and Loaded. Thank you so much. And Piers Corbin is incoming now for the first time on Locked and Loaded, so don't go away. Stay tuned. We'll be right back here on TNT Today's News Talk.
TNT's Pella Nuroth Taylor.
Paint a picture of this, what it would look like. In its various aspects, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, look, it's not too hard to recognize. We can see what's going on in China in the same exact way: social credit, surveillance, biometric tracking, facial scans, fingerprints, iris scans. All this is exactly what we're talking about. Drones, surveillance from the sky. You know, this is the kind of stuff that which most Americans may not be aware is already on your doorstep. It's already on the cameras in your stoplights. I mean, this stuff is everywhere. I'm not to suggest that those are iris scans in your stoplights, but surveillance, broad surveillance that has now begun to step into that. And so this is now something that we need to connect to immediately what's happening in our lives. And what we're talking about on the border is a both-way conversation. And this has been very public, right? That this is for Americans going out, Americans coming in, or legal immigrants going out, coming in.
In a democracy, the majority vote rules. But in most democracies, you can only vote for change every 3 or 4 years. To understand what people want, governments and political parties use focus groups. These focus groups can include as little as 20 people. Australia is a country of over 25 million people. Does making decisions based on 20 people sound fair to you? Have your say. Be heard in between elections. Download the For My Say app now. That is number 4, My Say.
The challenges our planet's animals are facing sometimes feel a bit heavy.
The animals haven't eaten in a day, 2 days, they haven't drank anything, they're cold, they're dehydrated.
As soon as we started our descent, everywhere I could see was mud, just absolutely mud.
So the country has been in prolonged drought so long, it was like a tinderbox waiting to go up.
Okay, very heavy. Each of us wants to be part of the solution, and we can be. Remember that there's good happening right now. At home.
All right, we were able to get into your unit and we have all 4 of your cats. So,
okay.
And around the world. For any animal in any disaster. So let's focus on that, right? Be part of the solution. One rescue at a time. Search ifa.org/disaster ready.
It's time to switch on
today's news talk radio.
Very entertaining.
Yeah! TNT.
Yes, TNT, today's news talk. We're just waiting for my next guest to actually connect. I've been reliably informed that he is in our green room waiting to hop on air. It's the one and only Piers Corbin, who was, for a period of time, running as the Lord Mayoral candidate. Of course, those elections are happening very, very shortly, but there's been a lot of skullduggery and shenanigans in and around that issue. So hopefully, if and when Piers connects with us, we'll be able to delve into that in a little bit more detail. But in the meantime, some other stories that are breaking, that are catching my eye at the moment. The Irish Taoiseach, or the Deputy Prime Minister, if you want, Micheál Martin, has said that it is clear that the social media site X, or Twitter, is not interested in tackling online hate. This is what he says, given the amount of hate and nasty rhetoric that he's been spewing for the last few years. I think the guy has a brass neck. And to quote him, he said, it is clear that social media site X isn't interested in sorting out hate issues online. The Foreign Affairs and Defence Minister said that the effect of smartphones and social media on children is a public health threat of our time. Well, actually, I don't disagree with him on that one. The Fianna Fáil leader made the comments on his In Conversation podcast this week, and I'm quoting, it's clear that X isn't going to be interested in sorting any of this out. Their model is heading in one direction. What direction would that be, by any chance? And I mean, like, I use the platform myself. I'm not a fan of Elon Musk. I got a free blue tick. I didn't ask for it, but I have it anyway. Apparently, it gives me greater reach, but it doesn't. My account is shadow banned to hell. There's apparently 60,000 people following it at the minute, but it gets less traction and less reach than it did when I had 5,000 people following it. So don't tell me that it's a benefit. Maybe it's just me. Maybe my content just sucks, but I'm not seeing it translating into traction whenever I put any posts out here. Michal Martin's guest in the podcast, immunologist Professor Luke O'Neill, said that the technology could be used in future to protect young people online. And there we have that classic expression. It's to protect the young people. It's for the greater good, bloody, bloody, blah. This is coming from an immunology professor. Martin said that similar to big tobacco, when the smoking ban was introduced, the big challenge is, do companies really want to do that? During a meeting with Education Minister, another absolute ghoul, globalist ghoul minister, Norma Foley, in February, social media giants refused a request for greater controls and age verification, and phone network companies refused to support a call from parents not to buy smartphones for primary school children. So whilst I agree with some of the lines that are being towed here by some of these mouthpieces, I have no doubt in my mind that their aim and goal is not to protect the children of Ireland. How could it be when they shut the schools of Ireland down? They shut the sports centres of Ireland down. They kept children locked down for years. They bombarded them with fear and terror and caused anxiety, massive mental health crisis amongst the children of Ireland. Don't tell me you're interested in the welfare of the children of Ireland. I'm not buying that one. So that's a statement made by the Taoiseach Micheál Martin. Also, the Irish government's medical regulator has received over 21,000 reports of suspected side effects of the COVID-19 vaccines administered in the state to date. Those are just reported incidents here that we have. So I'm taking that one with a very hefty pinch of salt. If the figure's 21,000, typically this is tip of the iceberg type figures. So I'm not buying that at all. If it's 21,000, you could probably stick a zero, at least one, if not two zeros on the end of that one, and come to a more realistic figure of the amount of people that have had, quote, suspected side effects from these jabs, these death jabs, the clot shots, call them what you will, administered by the Irish government. Also, in the ongoing ping pong game that's going on with migrants, the UK says it has no legal obligation to accept asylum seekers from Ireland and will not do so as the row deepens. So as McEntee is trying to close loopholes down and send migrants back to the UK that have flooded down from the north of Ireland, they're trying to punt them back again. And Sunak has, for once, maybe grown a set of gonads and said, well, we're not having them back. It's your problem now. You deal with it, Helen. You deal with it. But anyway, that's a total drama that's happening. It's an absolute farcical shit show that's happening there with the Irish government and the British government and this whole asylum business. And undoubtedly, the main actor, the grand finale of that one, is yet to come. Good grief. Do you know what? I'm going to take a pause. I'm going to recalibrate and collect my thoughts. If we can go to a news break right now, I think we shall. Piers hasn't weighed in. Maybe some technical issues there. Maybe we'll get him back another time. But I will be welcoming my next guest on, the one and only Ian Davis, to take the stand and tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help him God, when we come back at the other side of this news headline here on TNT, today's news talk.
Hey guys, great news.
News radio.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. Police in riot gear have stormed Columbia University in New York after protesters there smashed their way into a campus building and barricaded themselves inside. US President Joe Biden is reportedly considering offering Palestinians who've escaped the war in Gaza a permanent home in the United States. And Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has vowed to push on with his invasion of Gaza's southernmost city of Rafah, regardless of whether Hamas accepts its latest deal.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Yes, TNT, Today's News Talk, live, coming at you live from our undisclosed bunker location in the Gold Coast in Australia. I'm Rick Munn, and I'm really happy to be joined again by my longtime sparring partner here on Locked and Loaded, the one and only Ian Davis. Ian is a journalist, he's an author, he's a proper researcher. I was lamenting the dearth of genuine, independent, investigative journalist researchers on the world stage at the minute. I would count Ian Davis as being one of them. You can check out his website, iandavis.com, iaindavis.com. Follow him on X or Twitter, @_inthistogether, and check him out and support him on his Substack page, Ian Davis. Ian, welcome back to the Nut House. How are you doing this morning?
I'm very well, Rick. Thanks very much for having me back. It's a pleasure to be here.
Pleasure is mine, my friend. You've been writing like a gooden. You've been writing like a gooden on that Substack of yours. And actually, we've got a little bit of extra time here this morning. I do want to touch upon some of the writings that you've been putting out there, especially to do with that Richard Hall Manchester bombing case. A lot of questions, question marks, should I say, still remain over that one there. And I believe it's being very much suppressed by the powers that be and the mainstream media. I want to touch on that one, hopefully before the end of the show, but we do have a few other things highlighted to discuss this morning in and around current events. So I suppose we'll kick off here with terrorism. Okay, what a good way to start the day. A nice way to start your morning talking about terrorism. There was a post that you had highlighted yesterday. A man here, John Mooney of the Sunday Times, talking to someone called Katie Hannon, saying, "We're watching the evolution of a new terrorist movement. And it's not happening in Ireland, it's happening across America and Europe as well." So I'm going to throw the question at you. Are we witnessing the evolution of a new terrorist movement, or is it just simply the same old, repackaged and presented to us under a different brand and under a different wrapping?
I think we are watching the evolution of something that will be called a terrorist movement. I think we're also watching the evolution of unbelievable levels of manipulation in terms of information to create the myth of a terrorist movement. But fundamentally, I mean, we can go back sort of many years, but I mean, if we can go back to what, you know, Bush was saying, George Bush Jr. was saying after 9/11, that we should not tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories, which he said at the UN General Assembly. And then in 2014, we've got Cameron saying at the same at the UN General Assembly, we need to tackle extremism in all its forms. And then we can look at things like the UN's definition of violent extremist groups, which they say things like hate speech constitute, what they call hate speech constitutes. And I think that's an important to point that out. It's what they define as hate speech, they call violence. Now, so therefore, if you define what people say that you don't agree with and don't like, if you call that violence, then any group that is discussing things that you don't like, you can call a violent extremist group, which is exactly what the United Nations have done. It's exactly the kind of terminology that countries around the world, and we have recently seen this in Ireland, are doing. They are calling dissent violent extremism, and therefore it is tantamount to terrorism, which enables them to bring in all kinds of anti-terrorist and counter-terrorism legislation to apply to people. And when we're seeing this is happening now, to apply to people who are protesting on a wide range of legitimate political issues. Mm-hmm. So the people who are exercising the democratic rights that we are supposed to have are being termed as violent extremists, which is tantamount to terrorists, by their governments. And it is correct to say, Mooney was correct to the extent to say, that this is happening everywhere. It is happening in Ireland, which is what he was specifically referring to, but it is happening in the US, it's happening across Europe, it's happening across Asia, it is happening Africa, it is happening everywhere.
Let's take your comment on this then, because you commented on that piece that I just read out there that was posted by Upfront with Katie Hannon from RTE. So your comment was, one of the key aspects of globalist policy is to extend the notion of extremism to encompass all dissent or dissident against the globalist's tyranny. We've seen many COINTELPRO type operations used to start violence, to claim legitimacy for even more oppressive laws. Don't fall for it. So let's break that comment of yours in half. Number one, we are seeing pretty much everybody that's labeled coming out against any government narrative that's you're far right, you're an extremist, you're a dweller of the far right of the spectrum. So you're automatically labeled as that, as, you know, you remember during the COVID years, if you were, you didn't get your injection and you didn't follow the lockdown laws, you were endangering your fellow man. You were an enemy of the state, effectively. And of course, demonized as a result of that. And then you mentioned this COINTELPRO type operations used to start violence, to claim legitimacy for more oppressive laws. Explain to us what this COINTELPRO business is in your own words.
Yeah, it was an operation that was exposed. So this is, you know, call it a proven conspiracy, if you like, that the FBI ran in the United States, I think, in from about 1954 to the early 70s. So this is decades that they were doing this. And they were infiltrating political groups, not necessarily dangerous political groups, but groups like the Communist Party and even groups like the mainstream liberal parties. They were infiltrating, and then once they had infiltrated them, they were guiding those, or some of the more radical, you could call them radical elements within those political parties, towards committing criminal acts. And once they'd done that, and it was well proven that the FBI were basically orchestrating the criminal activity, they then swooped in to not only to arrest and prosecute the people that they'd set up, which they did set them up, but also to justify legislation to curtail the activities that wouldn't have occurred had they not been leading those activities. So that's COINTELPRO. That is what the FBI did in the US for decades.
Well, in principle, okay, let's take Ireland. Let's go back over to Ireland again, because this stuff's happening literally as we're speaking. This morning, outside the International Protection Offices in Dublin, the Gardaí, the Garda Síochána, the Irish police force, were brought in to remove, in the words of the Irish Prime Minister, or Taoiseach, a shanty town that had grown and been allowed to, for number one, it was allowed to be put there in the first place. It was allowed to mushroom in size. Action has now been taken because the residents of that area were feeling threatened, and assurances have been given that this won't happen again in the centre of Dublin. So the question is, well, why was it allowed to happen in the first place? You know, they had the power to stop this from happening to begin with, let alone to allow it to happen, to allow it to blossom and grow. And now these men have been dispersed to who knows where. The Irish government don't seem to be able to give us an answer to that one either. A lot of people are very, let's just say, concerned about what's happening in Ireland at the minute. You look at the protests over the last weekend at I can't remember the name of the place, but the guards came in hard, riot squad came in, they were beating people back off the streets. You could say those people were being provoked, because all they were doing, Ian, was asking questions. They said, well, who are, we're a small town, we're a small village, there's hundreds of men going to be planted in our community, we don't know anything about them, we have concerns, we're a little bit worried, but we want to talk to people, but we're not getting any answers. And what other option did they have but to take to the streets? And of course, more and more people got behind those protests. They were deemed to be extremists and radicals. They were beaten off the streets at the weekend. Again, does this not feed into what you were talking about, the COINTELPRO business? You know, agitators go in there, they stoke the flames of division, and they stoke the flames of anxiety amongst people, and then they have to come in heavy-handed to suppress the right wing. Is that not playing out in Ireland also?
Yeah, it's playing out everywhere. I mean, I'm not particularly familiar with what happened there, but, you know, we've seen this in protests, for example, in US campuses, where people are protesting against the genocide in Gaza. Now, you know, some protest is encouraged, So protests where, you know, for example, Just Stop Oil, or, you know, protests that are essentially pro-government policy, i.e. in this case, pro-net zero policy, they are encouraged and enabled. And you might have a few arrests of people that climb up buildings, but other than that, you know, it's encouraged. There's no violence. People are allowed to sit in the middle of roads and stop people getting to work. There's no problem with that. They can do that. But if you protest against the wrong thing, as in, you know, there's loads of young men coming from overseas that are being brought into our community. We don't know anything about them. They've come from potential hotbeds of terrorism, genuine, real terrorism. They're being put into our communities. I mean, this is not to say for one moment that those people, I'm not accusing any of those immigrants of being terrorists. But you know, it's a concern if you don't know anything about them. There could be some violent people in that group. But more to the point, these people are being introduced into communities. Are they increasing access to services to enable those people to be absorbed into communities so that, you know, it doesn't affect doctor's services, it doesn't affect transport services, it doesn't, you know, are these things being brought in to cope with an influx of people into a small village? Is that happening? No, it's not happening. So why wouldn't you be concerned about a sudden relatively large explosion of your population without the services being put in to cope with that explosion? Why is that not a legitimate concern? And in addition to the concerns that it isn't a legitimate concern, and the reason it isn't a legitimate curse, and the reason that the Garda are sent out to go and beat them up is because they are protesting against government policy. Yeah. If they were protesting for it, no problem. They could pretty much do whatever they like. As we are seeing in the US, you know, people that were protesting on campuses for government policy, for example, you know, protesting against China or protesting against what they thought was Chinese infiltration of, you know, their technological sector. When they protest against that, that's fine. No, the police don't turn up and beat them up. But when they protest en masse against the genocide in Gaza, then the police are sent in to beat them up. So you know, this is, I can't express, I don't think, in strong enough terms that what we are seeing is the manipulation of populations on an unprecedented scale. Even if we go back to COINTELPRO, which was a big thing that happened in the US, you know, the idea was there was an investigation into it, and it was supposedly shut down. That kind of operation has never been shut down. We saw from the Stevens report into the murder of Patrick Finucane, you know, that the British intelligence agencies were working with loyalist terrorists in Northern Ireland to commit terrorist crimes. Now,
collusion, that's another cold topic. I mean, if you dig into some of the worst atrocities that were committed in the Troubles over here, you know, the British government had their hand in a lot of it by colluding with loyalist paramilitaries, providing intelligence, providing the weapons. That's common knowledge nowadays, but it's not something that's talked about very often for obvious reasons. And just as we go to a break here, one thing that's very important to stress, somebody could listen to us and say, if it was the government, these guys, this guy Rick Munn, this guy Ian Davis, they're xenophobic. They don't want people coming into the country from overseas. That's their problem. They're racist. Listen, let me make this very, very clear. It's not about race. If there was 50 Welshmen, white Welshmen, who were planted into my community tomorrow, and I didn't know who they were, why they were there, what they were going to do, I would be a little bit suspicious. If there was 50 Belfast men or 100 men from Belfast moved up to where I live at the minute, which is only 15 miles down the road, I'd be asking exactly the same questions. This has got nothing to do with race, and it's got nothing to do with xenophobia or extremism. It's just natural concern for your own safety and your own community and the well-being of your community, but yet to ask those questions, we are labeled as extremists and intolerant and to be shut down and cracked down hard upon. We've got to take a little break, Ian. When we come back at the other side, another bizarre development that's happened up in Derry, in Northern Ireland, with the appointment of the first Maasai, Kenyan Maasai refugee mayor of Derry, that's ruffled a lot of feathers, not least of which within her own party, the SDLP. They're not happy with how this woman was positioned into this place. And of course, the accolades are coming in from Michelle O'Neill, the first minister from Sinn Féin. She thinks it's the greatest thing ever. Bizarre things are happening in Ireland, Ian. Let's dig into them when we come back after this break on TNT, Today's News Talk.
While serving in Afghanistan, I was hit by sniper fire. The fighting was so intense, the medevac chopper was barely able to land. In the hospital, I was given a 5% chance to live. It's a good thing math wasn't my best subject. Today, I visit classrooms and share my story. I talk to kids about dealing with life's struggles. I tell them, with a little help and a lot of work, that you can overcome any challenge.
DAV helps veterans like Adam get the benefits they've earned. They help more than a million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
I know that some struggles are big and some are small, but they're all struggles, and you have to learn to get through them. With support from DAV, more veterans like me can live their best life. And as a new father, I have one more reason to keep on keeping on. My victory is being there for the next generation.
Adam Alexander, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Need a ride? Yeah!
Driving with kids is a big responsibility.
Hop in and buckle up!
So don't sweat the small stuff.
You got paint all over our paper!
Get the big stuff right instead.
What does that mean?
Like making sure your kids are in the correct car seat and buckled up for safer travel.
That deserves a wiggly wiggly wig.
To make sure your child is in the right seat for their age and size, visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Beep, beep. Yeah.
This is Locked and Loaded with Rick Munn on TNT.
Okay, let's touch upon this story if we can here, Ian. So Derry, Londonderry, Stroke City, if you want to call it that, in Northern Ireland, has elected, or certainly received, its new mayor, Lillian Sinoy Barr. Now, Michelle O'Neill, the leader of Sinn Féin and the first minister here in Northern Ireland, said, "I want to offer my full support to Councillor Lillian Sinoy Barr. There can be absolutely no place in our society for this abhorrent, racist and misogynistic abuse. Those responsible do not speak for the wonderful and welcoming people of Derry and Strabane and for the work being done to build a better future for all." Now, this woman, since she's been placed in this role, has already came out and labelled some of the residents of Derry as terrorists. And if you know anything about the background to Derry, Londonderry, during the Troubles, there was a lot of human rights abuses happened there. Bloody Sunday happened there. And here we have Michelle O'Neill, the head of the Republican Sinn Féin Party, coming out and supporting a woman who's labelling the residents of Derry as terrorists. You couldn't make this up.
No, yeah. I mean, what she said was, if I quote what this, she said, this is Lillian Sinoy Barr. Yeah. She said, "If you go to any country where people are being divided because of politics, the ones that are causing all the trouble are called terrorists." Mm-hmm. Now, Michelle O'Neill, you know, that doesn't seem to matter too much to Michelle O'Neill. She's accusing anybody that questions the appointment of Lillian, who was appointed. She wasn't elected. You know, she wasn't elected into the position of mayor. She was appointed by her party to become the elected mayor, or I'll say elected, selected mayor in this case. So we can forget about any notion of democratic accountability or democratic legitimacy in this case, because she hasn't got any. But you know, Michelle O'Neill, you know, while she's supporting someone who is accusing the population of being terrorists because they disagree and have protested and have voiced their concerns about various you know, various aspects of policy as it applies to them. Because I think the important thing is to remember that policy affects us in our own homes. It's we have to abide by the diktats of these people, by law quite often. Michelle O'Neill has also obviously got herself into hot water when she said that, when she was talking about the activities of the IRA, when she said there was no alternative to violence. So on the one hand, we've got somebody who the First Minister of Ireland is supporting, having accused the population of being the dissenting element among the population of being terrorists, who herself previously got into difficulty after supporting real terrorists. Mm-hmm. I think people have got very legitimate reasons for concern. And again, it's got absolutely nothing to do mm-hmm. with the fact that Lillian is from Africa, that she's right. got African heritage. That's irrelevant. It's completely irrelevant. You've got officials going around accusing the population of being terrorists, and the First Minister supporting that. Mm-hmm. You know, that is what people should be and are rightfully concerned about. This is how this violent extremism, this extension of violent extremism label works. So all of those people with legitimate concerns, for all the reasons we've just discussed, can simply be called racist because the person that they are criticizing happens to be black and have African heritage. So therefore, they can all be dismissed as racists.
Yeah, the irony behind this is, I mean, like, I'm commenting on this, you know, if I'm labeled a racist, I've been to Tanzania, I've been to the western side of Nairobi, I've been with the Maasai people in the past, I've spent a lot of time with them, I've lived with them, so don't label me as a racist who can't abide Africans. I've spent the best part of 12 years living and working with them backwards and forwards, and actually speak a little bit of Ki Maasai myself. Believe it or not. So my issue isn't to do with the color of this lady's skin or anything else of the sort. My issue is to do with how this person was inserted into that role. And that's not just me, Ian, because members of her own party, the SDLP, the Social Democratic and Labour Party, they're not happy about it either. And at least one guy has quit over the way that this particular position was handled. But Barr's rhetoric, or Sinoy Barr's rhetoric, you mentioned there, if you go to any country where people are being divided because of politics, the ones that are causing the trouble are called terrorists. She also said those who mobilize in their community should be defined as domestic terrorists. And that's obviously a veiled swipe, I would say, or you could certainly read into it that the many, many people that are mobilizing in their communities against the plantation of unvetted men predominantly into the communities, they should also be labeled as a domestic terrorist. I think what's grinding people's gears is that someone is coming in to this position and labeling Irish people domestic terrorists for simply wanting questions to be answered. Like we said at the very start, people just want questions answered and they're not getting answers to those questions. That does not make them de facto domestic terrorists, Ian, because they've taken to the streets.
No, quite. And I just, you know, just like to say, Nini Nafahamu Ki Swahili Kidogo. As well, so you know, so
unasema unasema Kiswahili kidogo sana unahitaji kufanya katika Kiswahili halafu utawenda ufahamu pamoja nami kutumia Kiswahili kizamu. So anyway, yeah, I speak Swahili as well, believe it or not. So don't come at me with the racist card. Anyway, yeah, I said you need to work on your Swahili a little bit, and then we can converse together using that language. But there you go. You know, is that not the evidence that's needed, man?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, the point is, all these slurs and these insinuations are used to cast people as extremists. At the moment, the primary one is far right, but it doesn't mm-hmm. have to be far right. It could be just as easily be far left. It doesn't make any difference. It means the same thing in the mouths of these people. What it means is that you're not allowed to dissent against their diktats. That's what it means. It's what it always means. I'll rephrase that. It is not what it always meant, but it is what it means now, because language itself has been co-opted. Just simply to, I mean, a very fascinating article that I would suggest people go and read. Was written by James Corbett. Some people might be familiar with him, who took just a basic article and rewrote it as propaganda simply by changing the language that was used. And it was a fairly inane article, and he turned it into an incredible attack piece just by changing the language that was used. Mm-hmm. Now, that if we read mainstream media articles or we listen to mainstream media reports, we need to be acutely aware of the language they are using, because it is full of implications and implied meaning that when we get down into the nuts and bolts of it and question that implied meaning, 99.9% of the time there is nothing underpinning it. They're just spewing out propagandist words to marginalize people, to stop people questioning authority. Going back to what we were talking about earlier, it is a global anti-democratic push by countries and governments around the world, and it is happening simultaneously everywhere. We are under, you know, it goes to something actually called hybrid warfare. Mm-hmm. So hybrid warfare, which has been adopted by the UN at the globalist level, is the concept that there is no peace and there is no war. Everything is war. Everything. Mm-hmm. So all information is war. Everything that we say and we do is part of war. And what that ultimately means is, in the eyes of the people that we are allowing to rule us, we are the enemy. We are. So that when Lillian was talking about people that are organizing themselves and protesting are tantamount to domestic terrorists. Mm-hmm. We need to understand that the people that are pushing this at the globalist level are selling that idea. They are promoting that idea. Everyone that questions them, they are terming more or less as domestic terrorists, mm-hmm. to be tackled like terrorists.
One last thing, because we're nearly out of time here, Ian, and I really appreciate all your input and all these subjects that I'm chucking at you here this morning. It's great to hear your views on it. You have a Substack page, and I want to direct people there because we don't have time to get into this one right now, but you've spent a lot of time. I know you spent a lot of time over the last few weeks writing this latest piece, so you can check out Ian's Substack, Ian Davis, IAIN Davis.substack.com. There's a two-piece, I think it's a two-piece piece that you've put together. Brent and Neil go to Manchester introduction. So this is really a deep dive into Brent Lee and Neil Sanders have released their 8-part exploration of Richard D. Hull's book and film called Manchester the Night Before the Bang, where it's, he's talking about the Manchester Arena attack was staged, it wasn't real, it was a false flag event, whatever. Obviously, the media jumped all over that. He was tried on that recently. Evidence wasn't able to have been submitted into court because of something to do with the victims. One thing I want to do is, what I believe in with all my heart, is that lies do not stand up to scrutiny, okay? Lies do not stand up to scrutiny. Truth does stand up to scrutiny. So when you have people that are being suppressed, if I wanted to make a fool of you, I would take some lunatic piece that you've written and dissect it here and expose it for what it was, lies, because they do not stand up to scrutiny. Truth, however, does stand up to scrutiny. So you go into this in very great detail. It's not something that I got into in detail myself personally, but I'm going to take time reading this article of yours. And along with all your other writings, I would encourage you to check out what Ian does, because he's a proper investigative research type journalist. And he has what I believe he does have integrity, and he's not on anybody's payroll. So please support Ian. Go on to Substack, iandavis.substack.com, not only to see that piece, but a lot of other pieces that he has written recently. And of course, follow him on the Twitter or the X platform at _InThisTogether. So we've got a minute left. Any parting nuggets for us before we wrap this one up today, Mr. Davis? Or what's on your mind? Just you got 1 minute. Make it quick.
Yeah, I mean, that goes, you know, going back to what we're saying. So Richard D. Hall has actually presented the evidence, which shows the physical evidence, which shows that Manchester Arena was a hoaxed false flag, as in there was no bomb. Now, obviously, lots of people supposedly died. Lots of people were injured. And that faces us with a paradox, which I explore in that series. It's actually 9 articles, so it's taken me a fair few weeks to put this together because, you know, their podcast series was long. But the point is, straw man arguments, which is what you were alluding to, is very common propaganda technique, which we also need to be aware of.
Well, again, we don't have time for it today, unfortunately, my friend, but I'm trying to direct people to the direction of that Substack, iandavis.substack.com. Go on there and look at what this guy's been putting his time and efforts into him, and support him if you can, because he does a lot of this work and he puts a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into it. So, Ian, we've got to call time on this one right now. Massive thanks to you, as always, for taking time out to join me this morning, doing a little bit of an extra shift here today as well. Many thanks to you for that. I've got to get off now. James Freeman's incoming. We've got plenty more on the cards for the rest of this week. Stay tuned for more here on TNT, today's news talk.